Well, good morning, Noblesville. How are we doing today?
Doing well.
Oh, wow. You guys are exciting here. This is so much fun. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Jerry. I am the campus pastor over in Carmel. And I just want to reiterate what Jen said. On your way out today, you're going to receive one of these cards. And we want to invite you to buy these items and turn them in back here at the campus so we can bless our homeless friends here in the Indianapolis area. A few weeks ago, my wife approached me about a project that she wanted us to work on together in our boys' room. And she said, here, I've got a picture from Pinterest for you to see. Now, I got a little nervous. I don't know about you, but whenever I hear, here's something on Pinterest that I want you to try to do, I'm always thinking, well, there's just no way, right? Everything seems so perfect. So she hands me her phone. I'm like, oh gosh, what's it gonna be? And I look and I was so excited because it was the easiest project she could have ever picked, right? And I'm not very handy at all, but I knew right away, I've got all the tools that I need, all the know-how. So I'm just gonna go ahead and show you what the finished product looked like. This really simple shelving unit in our boys' bedroom, complete with a little Lego building station there on the bottom shelf, right? Now, if you're handy at all, you're probably thinking, what's the big deal? It's like the easiest project in the world. I know, but here's what you need to know. I have a track record. I take really simple things like this and I don't mean to, but I overcomplicate them. And this really simple project would be no exception to that rule. So we hang the brackets and we get everything together. And then it came time to cut the shelves. So we get the measurements and I go downstairs and I get my saw. And a couple years ago, my in-laws bought me this really sweet saw. So I was, you know, I got all the tools, right? So I cut the first shelf, we're good. I cut the second shelf, we're good. And I go to cut the third shelf and then something really exciting happened. Yeah, there was a spark, there was a sound. And we were both looking at each other like, what just happened? And my wife just walked away. She just walked away. Now, This is why I don't like home improvement projects, right? Because this is a reminder of what a failure I am when it comes to stuff. I just get so intimidated because that stuff happens to me on a regular basis. And somebody made the joke, oh, you have a cordless saw. Yeah, that's one part of the plan, okay? I gotta figure out how to get the cord back on that thing, right? Now, I don't know about you. I hate feeling like a failure. It is the worst feeling in the world. But can we just agree for a moment that failure is just a natural part of life? Like we are all going to fail, not just at something, but at some things. And it is not a fun experience. And maybe for you, it's home improvement projects, or maybe for some of us, it's like a diet or a workout routine that we've started or we're talking about starting. But every time we step on the scale and we see the number, all we see is failure. The number's not moving. It's going in the wrong direction, right? And you just, what do you do? With that, are there any other parents in the room that feel like you never know if you're failing with your kids? You just assume that you're failing. Thank you. There were no hands that went up first service. I thought it was just me, right? Parenting, that's just the way it works, right? You just wonder, am I ever getting this right? How bad am I really messing my kids up? I'm trying my best, but I just feel like a failure. Or maybe for some of us, maybe it's trying to live up to the expectations of our parents and they just seem impossible and we'll never measure up and we feel like a failure. Or maybe it's the fact that some of us feel like we never fit in social circles at home, at work, at school, no matter where we are, we feel like an outsider and we cannot help but feeling like a failure. Maybe it's the pain of a relationship that was supposed to last forever and now it's gone, it's over, it's done. And you can't help but feel like a failure. Or a career path that's gone up in flames and that feeling, it just follows you around. And no matter what it is, no matter what it is, I bet you're like me and you get that sick feeling in your stomach when you think about it, when the topic comes up, there's this sting of humiliation when you feel failure staring you at the face. But then there's also this part of it that's associated with our relationship with God. You know, and you hear pastors like me say things like, well, God loves you. And he sent Jesus into this world to die for all of your sins and all of your failures. And that's a good thing, right? But if you know you the way I know me, I know all of my failures. And I can't help but think, well, if God knows all this stuff about me, like how can he not view me as a failure too, right? And I'm just being honest, I feel this way. That thought kind of follows me around everywhere I go. And so what do you do about that? Do you just pretend that you got it all together? Do you just go through life doing your best to piece things together as you go? Or is it possible? Do you think maybe it's possible that God could meet us in our moment, our greatest failure, and maybe even use it to redefine our future. Do you think that's possible? Well, last week we kicked off this series. And we're talking about all these situations in life that have the potential to define us in all the wrong ways. You know, like when you feel lost and there's nowhere to turn, or you feel desperate and there's no help on the horizon, or you feel like a failure because there's just no hope for the future. And Jesus knew that life has a way of beating us down and making us feel like this. And in his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, he began with these words. You've heard these words before, I bet. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Right? Maybe you're like me, you've heard that, but have you ever wondered, what does it really mean to be poor in spirit? Well, I love the way that Eugene Peterson paraphrases Jesus' words here in the Message. In Matthew 5:3, Eugene Peterson says this: you're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. Have you ever felt like you're at the end of your rope? I don't have to explain to you what it means to be at the end of your rope, do I? You know it means you're at your wit's end. You're frustrated about the situation that you find yourself in because you're there again and there's no good options to get out. In fact, you don't even have the strength to fight your way out of the situation you have found yourself in. It looks hopeless and you feel helpless. And the only thing left to do is to wave the white flag of surrender and just give up. And failure, isn't failure one of those things that just gets us to the end of our rope really quickly? I want you to think about that area of failure that haunts you, and how you feel when you think about it. And here's why I want you to think about it, because I have some really good news for you. And I want you to hear this. The guy that knew Jesus better than anyone else when he walked the planet, Jesus's very best friend, is a guy that was very familiar with failure. And it wasn't just like an occasional thing for him. This guy made a lifestyle out of failure. His name is Simon Peter. You've probably heard some stories about him before. And today we're going to look at some stories from his life where he seemed to continue to fail over and over and over again. In fact, if you want to follow along with the story we're going to be looking at today, you can turn to Luke chapter 5. And the Bible's around the room. That's going to be on somewhere around page 714. But we're going to look at a story or some stories from Peter's life and see how he failed, where he failed, and how Jesus responded to him in that. And there's some hope in these stories for all of us. This story is my favorite story in all the Gospels, because I find myself in this story. And there's some things that Jesus said that I have got to remember if I'm ever gonna overcome failure. Now, a quick side note. Whenever I study the Gospels, there's a really simple tool that I like to use. It's called the Harmony of the Gospels. It looks just like this. You can order this online. It is well worth the money. A Harmony of the Gospels takes the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and harmonizes them in chronological order. And here's what's really cool about that. When you read the Gospels in chronological order, you learn how Jesus did what he did, where he went, what he did, what he said. And so it compares all these Gospel accounts together. And here's why that's so important. When you read the Gospels chronologically, you learn that Peter was one of the first four guys to get to know Jesus before anyone anywhere knew or even cared about who Jesus was. And shortly after meeting Peter, Jesus said, hey, I'm going out of town. Why don't you and some of your buddies come with me? And they go to a wedding in Cana where he changes water to wine, and those four or five guys got to see that miracle. And then from there, Jesus traveled to their hometown in Capernaum, and he hung out with them for a while, and they got to know him. Remember, this is before anybody knew or cared who Jesus was. And then after being in Capernaum for a while, he invites them to go with him to Jerusalem for Passover. This was a really big deal. This was like the Indy 500 of Jerusalem. You would go to this, everybody would go. And they went, and Jesus, while they were there, he got really upset. He made a whip and drove people out of the temple. And Peter and his buddies were like, wow, who is this guy? And then he took them into Samaria, where no good Jew would go. And then from Samaria, they went to what you would think would be a safe place, his hometown of Nazareth. You would think the people in Nazareth would love Jesus, but this time when he goes back to Nazareth, they almost throw him off a cliff and stone him to death. Now that's pretty fascinating, right? When you read the Gospels chronologically, you learn all of that takes place in about a year and a half. And so Peter and his buddies got a front row seat to discover who Jesus was as other people were learning who he was, but a lot of time elapsed before Jesus ever challenged them to really be his disciple. And then this is where the story gets real interesting. One of the next things that happens chronologically after all that is a story that maybe you're familiar with and you've read it before, but you didn't understand how it works. It's recorded in Mark 1 and in Matthew 4, and it says this: one day Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, and he saw four brothers fishing. And he goes up to them and says, follow me. I'm going to teach you how to fish for people. And they, in their boats, these professional fishermen, they leave their nets. Two of them leave their boat with the dad in the boat, and they just go and they follow Jesus and they learn how to fish for men. Now, have you ever read that story and thought, how am I supposed to do that? Well, here's the thing. Jesus had known them for 18 months. They were making an educated decision on who he was. They were taking a bet with their future, leaving fishing to learn how to fish for people. And then we get to this story in Luke chapter 5. And we don't know if it took place a few days later, a few weeks later, maybe a month later, soon thereafter, after calling them the fishermen, all those fishermen were fishing again at the very same place, and Jesus shows up. Now, I want you to pay close attention to the details of the story because I bet you find yourself in it somewhere. Luke 5:1 starts like this. One day as Jesus was standing by the Lake of Gennesaret, the Lake of Gennesaret, that's just another name for the Sea of Galilee, same place that they were before. The people were crowding around Jesus, listening to the word of God. Now, at this point in Jesus's ministry, he was a really big deal. And everywhere he went, there were massive crowds of people that would follow him. Okay, so he shows up. There's this big crowd of people wanting to hear what Jesus has to say. Verse 2, Jesus saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. Washing their nets tells us they had already been fishing. They were done for the day. Jesus got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon Peter, and asked him to put out a little bit from shore. And he sat down and he taught the people from the boat. Now, I would just take a moment, time out, and put yourself in this story. You're Peter, and you've been fishing all night. And you see Jesus show up, and as usual, the crowd, but this is your best friend. This massive crowd of people comes in. Jesus looks at you and is like, Peter, I need your help. They're pushing me into the water. Can we get into your boat and shove out a little bit? And so they do. And Jesus teaches from the boat, and I just picture Peter kind of sitting there in the boat. Now, if I were to invite one of you to come stand next to me for the next 20 minutes while I'm teaching, how would you feel? Would that feel a little awkward? Would you wonder what to do with your hands and where to look? Like, I imagine Peter sitting in the boat. He's like, why am I out here right now? What is happening, right? So Jesus teaches for a while. They hang out in the boat. And then look at what happens in verse 4. When Jesus had finished speaking, he says to Simon Peter, put into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. You can almost hear Jesus saying, hey, Pete, you love to fish. You're good at fishing. We're in the water. We're in your boat. Let's go catch some fish. And then look at Peter's response in verse 5. Master, we've worked hard all night. We haven't caught anything. But because you say so, because you're kind of a big deal, I'm gonna go do what you say. Let's go throw down the nets. Now, I want you to imagine that you're Peter. Okay, fishing in those days, this is manual labor. This is hard stuff, right? And another thing that it's probably helpful to know about fishing in that environment at that time, you would fish at night because the water would be cool and the fish would come to the top. And that's how you would catch them. Well, now it's daytime. And Peter's like, Jesus, it ain't gonna work. Now he's probably tired from being up all night. He's probably frustrated because he hasn't caught anything. But I'm guessing Peter's also maybe a little embarrassed because a few days or maybe a few weeks before, Jesus had called him to leave fishing and to go fish for people. But now Jesus has caught you red-handed and he wants to go fishing with you. And the whole thing sounds a little fishy, doesn't it? Like, what is going to happen next? Well, look at what happens. It shouldn't work. Verse 6, when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. Are there any fishermen in the room? Have you ever had caught so many fish that all your poles broke? That'd be a good day on the lake, wouldn't it? Can you imagine catching so many fish that your boats are sinking? Now, these men are professional fishermen. If you're a professional fisherman and you have a trip like this, my business degree says, you go, you sell all those fish and you buy bigger, stronger boats and stronger nets and you take Jesus fishing with you all the time. Because this is how you're gonna retire, right? And if you play it right, you can start a food truck because he can change water to wine for a little money on the side and you can sell all the fish. You're set for life. And you would have to imagine that Peter and his friends are celebrating. They're jumping up and down. I mean, this is it. This is what we have been waiting for. And then look at what happens in verse 8. When Simon Peter saw this, he falls at Jesus' knees and says, Jesus, this is amazing. Can we do this again tomorrow? Jesus, no one's ever taught me to fish like this. Will you please show me how to do that again? Well, that's not really at all what he says. He says, go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. Doesn't that seem out of place? Why would he say that? And then look at verse 9. For he and all of his companions were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken, and so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Luke tells us all the same guys are there. All of the guys that Jesus had called to fish for men went back to fishing, and instead of celebrating like you think they should, Peter finds himself at the end of his rope. He's freaking out. And I think we got to stop and say, why? Doesn't his response, it just doesn't match up with the circumstance. And here's what I think is going on. Even though this was the most, it says they were astonished. This is the most amazing catch of fish they could have ever imagined. I think Peter realized he's in a sinking boat with Jesus and it's all his fault. And I think what he's trying to communicate is, look, hey, Jesus, I get it. I'm a failure. I know that you asked me to do something different a little bit ago and I didn't obey you. And I'm a sinful man. Jesus, I mess things up. This is what I do. You don't want to be my friend, okay? Let's just part company. I'm not even a very good fisherman. Clearly, you can fish better than me. You're better off without me. Now, have you ever found yourself there? I mean, you want to do what God wants you to do, and you want to pattern your life after Jesus. You know it's all good, but if you're like me, you have some things that you've done, or if we were being really honest, there's some things that you continue to do, that we continue to do, we're not proud of. We don't want anybody to know. We thought we left these habits or these patterns behind. We swore we'd never do it again. And in our most private moments, have you ever just wanted to say, hey, Jesus, look, can we just be honest for a moment? I'm going to say it. I'm a failure. I know it. I know that you know it. I've wrecked my marriage, my relationship with my kids. They're toast. There's no hope for me anymore. Why are you even hanging around? My addiction is too much for me to overcome. It's cost me everything that's valuable. My career's a train wreck. I'm a joke. Nobody's going to hire me. I don't fit in with anybody anywhere. I'm clearly a failure. Okay? There's no way around it, Jesus. I'm at the end of my rope. I don't forgive me. You shouldn't forgive me. Let's just part ways. I think that's how Peter felt in that boat that day. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. Because his response just, it doesn't match up. But thankfully for Peter, and thankfully for all of us, Jesus gets the last word in this conversation. Look at what he says in verse 10. Then Jesus says to Simon Peter, listen to these words, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Really, Jesus, don't be afraid. Really? Because there's a whole crowd on the shore that just watched this happen. My reputation as a fisherman is shot because it shouldn't have worked and it worked and I don't know what I'm doing. Don't be afraid. How can you say that? Now, I wanna invite you to do something that's gonna feel a little awkward, but I want you to take a moment and try it. I want you to close your eyes. And I want you to picture yourself, you're Peter, you're in that boat, it's sinking fast. Jesus is right there next to you. And if you're like me and you're animated and you talk with your hands, just imagine what you would look like in that boat. And imagine the tone of your voice when you're saying, go away from me, Jesus. Okay? You picture that? Now I want you to picture Jesus saying to you, don't be afraid. What's his voice sound like? Is it harsh? Is it condemning? Is it sarcastic? Is he frustrated with you? Because I picture, if Jesus is who he says he is, I picture him reaching out and putting his hand on Peter's shoulder and in a very calming and loving way saying, hey, Peter, don't be afraid. From now on, I'm going to help you. I know that you feel like a failure, but don't be afraid. I don't see you the way you see you. I see more potential in you than you could ever imagine. So you messed up, Pete. Don't be afraid. This doesn't have to define you. And if you're willing to work with me, I can use this failure to redefine your future. Now you can open your eyes. Can you imagine how freeing it would feel to hear Jesus say those words to you. Imagine you're Peter and you're in that situation. Can you just, this is Jesus talking to you. And I think maybe the most important thing that Jesus wanted Peter to learn in this instance can be summed up from a very famous quote, and it's simply this: failure is an event, not a person. Failure is an event. It happens, but it's not a person. Failure is inevitable. It's unfortunate. It's one of the harsh realities of living on this planet. It's going to occur in our lives, but it doesn't have to define us, especially if Jesus is in the boat with us. And I think this is what Jesus was wanting Peter to know. I'm not bailing on you. Don't bail on me. I'm not giving up. Hang in there. We can do this. Now, when I cut the cord off of my saw, my wife just went inside. Probably wise. She knows me, right? I usually would lose my cool. I just sat down. I didn't know what to do, okay? But I thought, I've got to finish this project for my wife. And so I started the long walk of shame down the street to my friend Brad's house. He's a professional contractor. He has every tool you could imagine. He could make a fortune if he would just rent me tools, okay? I'm always borrowing stuff from him. So I go and I knock on his door. Hey, Brad, can I borrow your saw? He's like, sure, no problem. Now, I grew up in a faith tradition where we would confess our sins to people. And so I thought, this is probably, I need to tell him, hey, Brad, the reason I'm borrowing your saw is because I cut the cord off of mine. Yeah, he smiles at me real big. And I thought, he's going to bless my heart. I'm just, whatever he says, I'm going to have to take it in right now because I need that saw. And he smiles and he hands me his saw and he goes, guess what? I've done it too. And he unwinds the cord. This guy's a professional. Unwinds the cord and says, see, I cut it here and I restrung it. And I was like, well, I don't know how to do that, but that's cool. He hands me the saw and I walk home and I don't feel like such a failure. Brad's a pro. I smile. I could not wait to, I walked through the door and I was like, guess what Brad did? He cut the cord off his saw too. I think this is what Jesus was going for with Peter. Hey, like, you're not the only one out here. All these other guys are fishing with you. Like, this doesn't have to define you. Let's move past this. This is just an event. So how would Peter respond to Jesus's invitation? That's the big question, because he's already freaking out. He's already at the end of his rope. Well, look at what happens in verse 11. So they, Peter and James and John and all of his fishing buddies, they pulled their boats up on the shore and they left everything, the nets and the boats and the fish. They left everything. And they started following Jesus. Now, remember, when you read this in order, this is the second time that Jesus has issued this invitation to them. And this time, they take him serious and they begin learning how to fish for men. And isn't that a good, that's a happy ending to a story about failure, right? They just walk on with Jesus and he's like, don't worry about it, just leave it, we'll clean it up later. And they go move on with life. And don't you wish that that's what failure would look like? That would happen for you in your life. It would just, you just move on. Well, thankfully for us, Peter wasn't done failing. He continues. If you read through the Gospels, bless his heart, he is mentioned more than any other disciple, and he's never quite getting it right. There was an instance on top of a mountain where Jesus revealed his full glory to Peter and two other disciples. And while this is happening, his full glory is God. Moses and Elijah, Old Testament prophets, show up, and Peter gets so excited. He's like, Jesus, this is great. I'm going to build a tent for all of us and we'll just live up here forever. And the voice of God speaks from heaven and says, Peter, that's my son. Just listen to him. Quit talking right now. Would you not feel like a failure? On the night that Jesus, as he's being arrested, they're literally taking him into custody. Peter draws the sword, cuts an ear off a guy named Malchus. Okay. Jesus bends down, picks up Malchus's ear, puts it on his head, heals him. And it's like, Peter, put your sword away. This is not how this is supposed to go. In front of all the guards, in front of all the disciples, how could you not feel like a failure? And then later that night, after swearing that he would not deny Jesus, he denies him three times. And the third time he denies that he knows Jesus, it is to a middle school servant girl. How could you not feel like a failure? And the more I study Peter's life, the more I realize if anybody can relate to the way I feel, it's definitely Peter. Because I don't know about you, but man, failure just seems to follow me around. It's not an event for me. It feels like a lifestyle. Because I say and do things that I regret. I do something for myself that hurts other people. I overreact at home and I hurt people's feelings. I feel like I'm underperforming at work and it's just like failure, failure, failure. And I know that Peter can relate. And I have to wonder how often Peter had to go back and play the tape over in his mind, remembering in that boat, every time he failed, Jesus said, don't be afraid from now on. Don't be afraid from now on. We're gonna work through this. We're gonna do the thing that I told you we could do. Let's work with me, okay? And I think he kept doing that over and over and over again. And so maybe that's what we should do. In fact, I wanna challenge you this week to make some time to sit alone with Jesus. And I want you to think about your biggest areas of failure. Like when you, even the thought of thinking about it makes you nervous. And I want you to identify it. And I want you to ask Jesus how he would fill in this blank. If you're taking notes, write this down. Don't be afraid. From now on, I will help you. What would Jesus put right there? What would he say to you? You can ask him. He will tell you. Don't be afraid. And maybe he would say, don't be afraid. From now on, I'm going to help you be the spouse that you promised to be. Don't be afraid. From now on, I'm going to help you parent your children with love and with grace. Don't be afraid. I'm going to help you keep your anger in check when you start to come unglued. Don't be afraid. From now on, I'm going to help you work with integrity. I'm going to help you overcome that addiction that enslaves you. I'm going to help you find a person or people where you will find community and you will feel like you belong. Don't be afraid. But from now on, I'm going to live out my purposes in your life and you're going to help me. Now, if you're like me, you think, that just sounds too good to be true. I understand why that would work for everybody else, but that's not going to work for me. Well, I have to believe if it was true for Peter, it's true. It's true for me and you too. Now, if you keep reading through the Gospels, there's a fascinating story at the very end of the Gospel of John that kind of summarizes Peter's ongoing struggle with failure. And here's what's really interesting. If you know anything about the Gospel accounts, think about how they end. Jesus rises from the dead. He appears to his disciples, he teaches them, and then he ascends into heaven, right? He prepares them to launch the church. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all end that way. John ends his gospel in a way that's completely different. He talks about the resurrection, but in John 21, he spends the entire chapter, the last chapter of his gospel, talking about how wonderful Jesus is, and he records a conversation that Jesus and Peter had with one another. Okay, so here's the setup. It's about a week or so after the resurrection. Jesus has appeared to his disciples. He's coming, he's going. One of the disciples has bailed on the mission. He committed suicide. So there's only 11 left. And in this story, in John 21, seven of the 11, Peter being one of them, are hanging out together. And I think they're trying to figure out what to do with life now. What do we do now that Jesus really is the Messiah? What do we do since he's back from the dead? Peter has this great idea in John 21:3. Look at what he says. I'm going out to fish. Now, here's what's really interesting. There is no other record of Peter and his friends fishing again together. It's been 2 years, almost 2 years since Luke 5. They gave up fishing. Peter gets to go fishing one time and Jesus gives him permission. It's a really weird story. But outside of that, this is the only other time that Peter declares, I'm going fishing. And you would think the six guys that are with him would say, I really don't think that's a good idea. Like, we gave that up, remember? That's our old way of life. Maybe we should just wait and see what we're supposed to do next. But look at how they respond in John 21:3. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them. And they said, we will go with you. I think they were so flustered. They didn't necessarily know what to do. They were just going to do something that was comfortable. And look how the verse ends. They went out and got into a boat, but that night they caught, what's the word? Nothing. 2 years later. Sound a little familiar? Look at verse 4. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore. This is a different account than Luke 5. This is 2 years later. Jesus stands on the shore. They didn't realize it was Jesus, and he calls out to them, friends, have you caught any fish? Now, if I'm in the boat, I'm like, who is the jerk on shore that is calling us out right now? Are you kidding me? And I love their response. No, no. What nerve. And then the guy on the shore shouts back out to them, have you tried throwing your nets on the other side of the boat? That doesn't even make sense to me, right? Like, fish don't know a side of the boat, but they do it. And look at what happens. When they did, they were unable to haul in the net because of the large number of fish. And here's what is so cool. in this moment, if you read the rest of John 21, Peter looks at John and says, that's Jesus. Like, I know that's Jesus. And instead of whining about being a failure, instead of like, go away from me, Jesus, he does something that is completely ridiculous. He jumps into the water and swims to Jesus. It leaves all the guys in the boat with all the fish. They're in a mess and he's just trying to get to Jesus as fast as he can. Now, why would Peter go fishing that day? I have no idea. I don't know if he had given up on the mission. I don't know if he assumed that Jesus had given up on him. I don't know if he just didn't know what to do. But I think the reason he's swimming so fast to get to Jesus was he had learned a really important lesson. With Jesus at your side, failure is an event that he can use to redefine your future. When Jesus is with you, failure is an event, no matter what that failure is, that he can use to redefine your future. And if you read the rest of John 21, they eat breakfast together, all of them. And then Jesus says, hey, Peter, would you mind going on a walk with me down the beach? And they take off walking. And while they're walking, Jesus forgives Peter 3 times for denying him 3 times. He reinstates him and he says, I've got big plans for you. And here's what's really cool. If you go on and you read the next book in the New Testament, the book of Acts, you learn that Peter is the guy. He's always been the guy that Jesus was going to entrust to lead the early church. He's the guy that preaches the first sermon and 3,000 people respond and they're baptized that day and the church is born. He's the guy that leads when Paul is persecuting the church. He had learned a valuable lesson. Jesus can take your failures and redefine your future. But while they were walking on the beach that day, the last words that Jesus says to Peter, recorded in John 21, 19, are simply this. Follow me. I don't want you to worry about all the ways that you've messed up your life. I want you to follow me. I don't want you to worry about what anybody else, anywhere else is going to do. I want you, Peter, to follow me. I've got big plans for you. I don't see you the way you see you. Quit giving up on you. Trust me. Follow me. And here's the thing, guys. I don't know what failure looks like for you. It follows me around everywhere. I'm sure it follows you around too. I'm sure it probably scares you the way it scares me. But Jesus wants to say the same thing to us. Don't be afraid, because from now on, I'm going to help you. I just want you to follow me. I want you to trust me. I can restore relationships. I can bring up new relationships. I can help you find a new job. I can help you say you're sorry. I can restore you. I can get you help. I can do anything. I'm Jesus. I want you to trust me. I want you to walk with me, and I want you to follow me. So what would it look like for me and for you and for us to meet Jesus right here in the midst of our failures, to take him up on this invitation? Do you think he could really help you? I think he can. I think he can help me. I wouldn't, but I think he would. I think he can. I think he will. So what's it going to look like for us to respond to this invitation? Maybe for some of us that have been following Jesus for a while, we've reordered our life around Jesus, and maybe it's time that we reorder our life around Jesus and we really get serious about following him. Or maybe we've been sitting on the fence about who Jesus is, and maybe it begins by surrendering to him. You could do any and all that today. What are you waiting for? Where is failure hunting you down? What is failure holding you back from? How can Jesus help you move beyond it if we would just agree to follow him? Would you pray with me? Father, I'm so thankful for these words. I'm so thankful for these stories. I'm so thankful for these examples. I'm thankful for the way, Jesus, you were really, really, really patient with Peter. I'm thankful that you restored him and that you forgave him and that you used him. And I think all of those stories are in there because that's exactly what you want to do with us, in us, and through us. Would you help us to get very real about our failures? To talk to people about them, to confess them, and then to trust that you're going to meet us there. To invite you into the boat that's sinking, Jesus, and to watch you do more than we could ask or imagine for your glory and through your power. Would you please set us free from the fear of failure and help us to walk in the life that you have for us? by the power of your Spirit and for the glory of your name. It's in your name we pray, Jesus. Amen.